Oh, it's the Noontime Constitutional. Being a pretty strong south wind. Usually it's north, but it's pretty cold. But like it was this morning, it's a humidity thing. Well, anyway, so wandering around a little bit on doesn't have very much, but Slashdot had up an article, Orson Scott Card, who he was contracted to write kind of a Superman comic book reboot, as far as it seems, and apparently word got out, which always happens on the internet now, word got out that he was opposed to gay marriage, and that's causing him all kinds of, everybody's big haze, and how much of a big and I found it interesting because somebody threw up this link in the comments, so I went, that link is for a YouTube video, and it was probably one of the lamest. Oh, yes. It was like, what? Because there's nothing there. YouTube is just amazing for propaganda. Well, once you put something into YouTube, down the right side, you'll get a whole line of related videos. There's one about a gay woman, so it's like, okay, fine. I'll tell you first off that there is, I see a big about this recording before, but I'll be clear about it again if I can be, which is that I don't consider anybody to be gay unless they're engaged in a gay lifestyle, which is to say going out and having sex with people of their same gender, of course, to whom they're not married. Now, all this gay marriage stuff, I think, is just to seek a little bit of legitimacy so that you can't no longer say, well, I'm married, so I can have sex with them. It's okay. You go, I don't think God thinks it's okay. And so I have to kind of stay on that side of it. Anyway, it was a decent video from a guy who said, I'm gay and I'm a woman. And I would be the person to say, have you actually had sex with a man yet? And he could say no, and I'd say, well, then you're not gay. Gay means you've done something else. I know it's simpler to say I'm a gay Mormon than it is to say I'm a Mormon who has same-sex attraction. It's just simpler. But I think it churns up something, and we probably need to be a little more clear about what exactly we mean. That when he gets on, he says, I'm a gay Mormon, he needs to be a little more specific about what that means. Of course, he says, oh, I'm going to have to be celibate. And I go, well, that's not true. That is not true. If your marriage is based strictly on, you know, groping, leering at people, you go, you don't have a very good marriage. You have to understand what these things are. And if that's missing, that doesn't mean that you can't have anything. It's like, oh, come on! You can have a much better life than you. Don't hang out on these gay sites because they say, I swear. And that in itself is a really bad I'll look to another video where it talked about what I consider to be a very common phrase, is that anybody who's so weird and gets so crazy about gays and gay lifestyles must be himself. Very common. I thought it about myself once in a while. But I'll tell you. I was younger, first married. I still lifted up the girls. And I guess that means I can't possibly be gay. So, gay people. Oh, wow. I don't know. Anyway, that's all check me out. Poignant term that really spells it all, leering. I was leering. And, not very long. Right. Came back. You aren't to do that. And so, stopped doing it. Taught myself not to do it. And I'm sorry. The whole thing about same-sex attraction is what becomes of when you have to wander someplace where it really shouldn't go. You could say, well, James is proving that he's a heterosexual. Isn't that wonderful? Way away! No! Hello? That doesn't honor my relationship with my wife. That doesn't honor the covenant that we've made with each other. That it's just the two of us when it comes to intimate things like that. Feeling that way about other people. Not feeling that way about other people. If your wife, I'll take a man's point of view here, because I'm a guy. If your wife, you're looking at younger girls and doing things like that, you know where those things are going to lead to. You're not being honorable to her. She's constantly concerned. Some women will try really hard to be younger. They'll be a little more provocative in the way they dress. Trying to compete, trying to keep you from looking at other things. But it really ends up being your man. I'm not going to be here. I'm not saying this at all. Things like that happen. You need to do everything you can to let them know that they're number one. Nobody else is number one. The world is full of those kinds of That's where pornography starts doing what it does, and things like that. I'm sorry. Gay man. It was interesting. I think a lot of people handled it pretty well. I am the first one to say, you need to be more careful about what you say. I doubt you're gay. Because if you're gay, we need to excommunicate. Because you've committed the law, or you need church discipline because you've either fornicated or you've committed adultery. Most likely, in his case, it would have been fornication. And that's a legitimate sin. I think it's pretty well spelled out in whatever scripture you seem to believe that fornication is wrong. To have sex with somebody you're not married to is a sin. Ta-da! And I'm sorry, gays throw this out so far that people forget to come back just to the basic idea. Have you had sex with somebody else of your own? Have you had sex with somebody else? Yes! Were you married to them? No, but I'm gay because that doesn't cut it! You need to be stronger than that! Don't wrap this up in all of the feel-good crap of this time. It's so wrong. We're never going to be able to be married because that is also garbage. Of course you can marry. You can marry anyone in the opposite sex. You're a little attracted to them. And you go, is that all you think about? Is your penis running your life? Good gracious, man. I'm not really turned on by her breasts or her butt. And you go, that's not the relationship. That can be a start for the relationship, but that can't be the relationship. Trust me, a marriage won't last if that's what it's based on. If that's the only thing it's based on. It's not even necessary. And to continue to be focused on those kinds of things, physical attributes, a kind of sexual tension and stuff like that, you've got this whole marriage thing screwed up. It has to do with a lot of other things. And trust me, men and women married, being intimate is sexually fulfilling to most people. But let me be honest. If it's not, sex between a man and a man isn't going to all of a sudden fulfill you. Who knows? People are weird that way. But number one, you're not gay until you do that. Until you express yourself that way. If you say you have a same-sex attraction, you know what? I don't know why you're talking about it publicly. That's like saying you have this interesting birthmark on your butt. Why are you showing that off? Is that even interesting? That's something that you need to discuss with your spouse before you get married. If you're intended, if you say, hey honey, you have to understand, I really don't have those kinds of feelings about you. And she might go, oh, it can be worked through, and actually it can probably be worked through rather easily. If you have better and deeper feelings about a person than just sexual attraction, you're already further down that road toward being a better husband, a better father. Golly, you're not just having to be held to account for Oh, God. Because what happens when she's older and she's no longer very sexually interested? Because that typically happens. We don't all have beautiful bodies for 30 or 40 years. through our entire marriage. We get older. We get more difficult to deal with. We get grumpier. We do all kinds of stuff that come with growing older. And if it's based strictly on sexuality, well, that's going to be a pretty sad marriage if it stays together at all. And anybody will come back and say, well, that's not very good. I'm going to put this inside my jacket. Try to protect it a little bit from the wind. Because I say, well, to face the wind head on. Woo! Okay, so we did that one. I think I've talked enough about the whole thing. Anyway, that led to this guy's sister. She's older. She revealed in one of her videos that she's 30 and she hasn't gotten married. And she's got a master's degree and she works and she's a career woman. She's really, I kind of like her videos. She tries to explain what Mormons believe. Of course, she's a Mormon. And it was really quite good, I guess. She's very cute, and she's very engaging, she's very smart, and one kind of wonders why some guy hasn't gotten down on his hands and knees and begged her to marry him. Probably because she wouldn't marry that kind of a guy, but... Well, then I looked over there on the right side again, and of course, whenever you go to something that has the word Mormon in it, four or five of the things are by Mormons or pro-Mormon, and all the rest are anti-Mormon. There's a lot of anti-Mormon stuff out there, and I was drawn to one. And I always supposed that this was true of people who decide not to be a Mormon anymore. Usually, I've always considered it had to do with A, the fact that they really don't have a strong testimony of, like, say, the Book of Mormon, for instance, in the first place. They really don't. They've really never gone through what it takes to really know this stuff is true. I like to call them cultural Mormons. Christians love them because they think there's so much weight to it, and they said, oh, I'm a fourth generation Mormon. That's the first tip-off that what you're dealing with is a cultural Mormon. One that's just a Mormon because everyone else around them are Mormons. And their allegiance to the Book of Mormon, to Joseph Smith, to our concept of Christ and our concept of Heavenly Father and our concept of how things work has far more to do with believing what everyone around you is believing. Very common thing. I think it's incredibly common in Christianity. When they say, oh, people are leaving the Mormon church in droves because it's just not true. Let me tell you, the numbers are not amazing. There are far more people. Of course, the proportions are different too. I would not be surprised at all to see that the actual proportions are probably compatible. For the number of people who were Christians as children, Christians until they got into their 20s, or raised in a Christian home, and then decided they didn't want to be Christians anymore. I'd have to say that I'm sure the numbers are roughly comparable. Of course, there isn't very much for Christians to rebel from. It's really not a very most Christians don't cling to it very well. And therefore, when you say, oh, I don't want to be a Christian anymore, there's really nothing to it. And the biggest thing is, well, were you really much of a Christian to begin with? Well, I was listening to this lady. I have an impression that being an ex-Mormon who can speak well is the beginning of a not a terribly lucrative career, but one that can pay the bills. First thing you gotta know about Mormonism is that on the local level, outside of a group of 200 people who do ecclesiastical work for the church full time, it's all lay ministry. Nobody makes any money with it. I personally look a little askance at people who kind of cast in on it. It's a difficult thing to do. And I don't think anybody really makes much money off of it. Of course, I'm sure that's true of these ex-Mormons. If you were telling your story of how she came to these decisions, it's by the typical anti-Mormon route that's taken from people who never really had a testimony in the first place in any of this stuff. They could go up to in front of the church as often as down at the pastor testimony meeting and go up and bear their testimony. Don't tend to. But they've never really had that spiritual experience. They've never gone up and said, I read the Book of Mormon and I prayed about it because I wanted to have an answer. That is rarely a place where Christians will go. They don't like going there. But typically they don't have to. They do it through the common method of, is this plausible? Is this possible? We have no evidence of this, and there's no evidence of that. Christians often bring up a couple of scriptures and say, oh, well, you can't have a Book of Mormon because of this and this. And they go, oh, well. That's an interesting way to interpret it, but it's not clear. It's not clear on any measure at all what's being talked about. One doesn't want to bring up terrible inconsistencies in the Bible, although the inconsistencies found in the Book of Mormon are used as, you know, wooden stakes through the heart of those Mormon vampires. And And I'm sorry. It's out of respect for the Bible that most Mormons don't do that. I know there's probably a few who go to those kind of attacks, but I don't see the purpose of it. It's easy to see when you say, okay, when you say the Mormons aren't true, which Christian church is true? And then they start, well, they're all true. And you go, now that's patently garbage. Come on. So they teach different things. The Pentecostals, just like the Jehovah's Witness, they're all the same. So then I'm confused. Why are the Mormons bad? Oh, well, they do this. Well, let me tell you. Baptists compared to Methodists, compared to Presbyterians, compared to Catholics. So you're saying that this church is really troublesome, but all the rest of them are fine. I don't. I'm really confused by where the thought process comes. How does that come? And then I clicked on another one of those right-hand side things where it talks about a guy who was a Pentecostal preacher and decided he wanted to leave the Pentecostal church and his problems with it. And they seemed really mirroring the kinds of arguments that you would use to get Mormons to stop believing the Mormon church. He was using the Pentecostals to get people to stop going to a Pentecostal church. And I found that just hilarious. I was sitting there going, oh wow, this is awesome. I'm not going to use those techniques particularly. Except if they're just, you know, let's just get to some common ground here. You don't believe this stuff, but yet you won't ask God about it. You'll do everything but ask God about it. I find that interesting. Do you not believe God will give you an answer? And then they have to sit there and say, no, I believe that God will not give me an answer. Or that their answer can be found through logic and stuff like that. And you go, well, I'm sorry. Can logic save me? Did logic get me to believe the flood story? Did logic get me to believe that Moses saw God face to face and received inspiration from him or whatever, however you guys want to paint it? Did Moses part the Red Sea? Do you believe that? Did Elijah part the River Jordan? And then Elisha did a little bit later. You guys, if you have a problem with that, I'm really confused. When you start throwing logic into this, I can start picking apart your religious system the same way. I don't think any of us want to go there. Do you want to go there? Because that fourth generation Mormon who decided that once they got a hold of some anti-Mormon literature, decided that they had serious problems with some of the teachings of the early brethren of the LDS Church. Well, how do you feel about Abraham? How many wives did he have? Heck, he had concubines! There were servants of his wives that he was having sex with and having children by. And it doesn't seem to bother you very much. Well, I'm confused. How come it's okay then? It's not okay now. You say it's your God to save you yesterday, today, and forever. It seems like he was okay with it there. How come he isn't okay with it here? Oh, boy. So, you know, I'm not here to destroy your faith in Christianity. I don't find that useful. So all I want you to do is just be a little consistent. That you have to believe, you have to know that just as much as you think that a fourth generation LDS girl, woman, has been deluded by her tradition, that you could just as easily be deluded by your tradition. Length of the tradition does not justify things, does it? Are we going to throw out the world around because the tradition for a long time among right-thinking people was that it was flat? Is that the justification? So, I'm not going to use it to try to convince you that you're wrong or that I'm right or any of that. Because there's already been a way established. Moroni set it up. God told him to do it that way. And it's your testimony. Says I'm not going to lose mine because some Christian tells me all these logical reasons why this isn't very plausible. Where's Noah's Ark? How can we have no evidence of that? How can I believe there's a flood just because a lot of people said that there was a flood? Maybe one original storyteller came up with it, and everybody said, that's a pretty cool story. I think I'm going to weave that into my little creation story. That's cool. Scares people. They'll be more obedient if they think God's going to wash them away. Oh, he promised he wouldn't. Well, he didn't say he wasn't going to burn them out this time. I'm not here to tear down your belief in the Bible. I'm glad you believe in the Bible because it makes you a better person, makes you a better neighbor, and I appreciate that. Because then your tendency isn't to come and rob from me, carry off my wife, do unspeakable things to my children. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for Christianity, but you sure are applying a litmus test to Mormonism that I think Christianity would fall apart against. And you give the impression that Christianity is safe. And you go, the only reason why Christianity is safe because there's nice people around that aren't trying to tear up your religion. Sadly, Christians have a problem in giving the same courtesy to Mormonism. Oh, you know, I can go walk a little further. I think I'm gonna. If you want to know more about what Mormons believe, my advice is read the Book of Mormon. If you want to know if it's true or not, take the test. Does the test seem does the test seem good? Do you think you could be tricked by this test? Do you think somehow Mormons can twist lies into a spiritual experience? Have you seen Mormons? Have you seen how they work? These are not charismatic people, by and large. Which I think Christianity relies on their charismatics to keep people coming in, to keep people in the system. The only Mormons that you will get typically going to other Christian, I'm sorry, I'll stop using the word other because that offends them. The only Mormons you will know, you will see going to a Christian church after they've been liberated from Mormonism are ones that really weren't very good Mormons to begin with. And that sounds bad. they really weren't people who had really gone through the effort of trying to figure out if what they believed was true. It was something their parents taught them, it was something they were surrounded with, whatever. And I'm the first one to say, be skeptical, challenge it. But you seek truth. Most of these people aren't really bothering to seek truth. They would just assume you didn't believe anything as believe a Mormon. I had a wonderful couple come, Jehovah's Witnesses. They were kind to share with me some of their beliefs. I found their beliefs really interesting. From the standpoint of, how on earth can you ever know if this stuff is true? How on earth can you ever really have... And of course, they were coming and trying to convince me that the things that I had were false, that they were from Satan. And I go, if Satan has such an amazing ability to go into my heart and help me have these feelings, then how powerless is God that he can't do at least the same thing, if not better? In fact, he should do better, right? Is God not better than Satan? Satan doesn't seem to have any compunctions about letting people know he's there. In fact, I bet if you did a survey and it wasn't biased in some way, that most people believe in Satan. More people believe in Satan than they do in God. Now God has to be sought. Satan doesn't have to be sought. But you're telling me that when I pray to God, somehow Satan can slip in and say something like that. But how then can I know that any of this is true? How do I know that Elijah, for instance, wasn't a trickster? How do I know that Paul wasn't just this guy weaving a story? And then he and a couple of his buddies didn't decide to make up the whole thing. How do I know that? Apparently God has no way of telling you that. Here's the book. Here's the Bible. You have to believe the Bible. You go, how does one come to know that? Well, we believe it to, I mean, golly! I can give you a wonderful road by which the Bible could have been totally corrupted. You're not a Catholic, are you? Most of them will say, no, I'm not a Catholic. You go, why aren't you? If you believe in the Bible, you have to believe in those that gave you the Bible. Because it's the Catholic Church. So you need to just sit down, shut up, and go to Mass. I understand what you're fighting about. If it's about different interpretations of what's being said, who's to say yours is any better than theirs? Who's to say? I had this conversation once with a person who said that God wouldn't allow the Bible to be ruined. And I said, well, how many different renditions of the Bible are there today? How many different translations are there? And of course, most of them say, well, there's one that's faithful. I don't know how many there are. I know there's probably four or five big league ones. A lot of the littler ones take the flavor of the Bible and make like a study Bible with it. You know, that's fine. Whatever. And you go, each one of them just slightly askew from the others. They try to modernize the language. They try to stick in something. They all swear up and down that they studied the Greek version diligently, the oldest copies they could possibly get. Of course, the sad part is these days we have even, so we don't necessarily have any older versions than what like King James had, or with what the original Roman version of the Bible that Constantine had assembled, that those first councils had put together. I don't think we have any sources that are any better than those. And they struggled and fought over what should be included and what shouldn't be included, and you're going, if you bring up the whole thing, and Christians always do, it's one of the favorite things to do about saying, well, the Book of Mormon can't be true, and here's just one scripture that just demolishes it, about it can't add to or take away from it, or you know, punishments will ensue, and you go, I think in the first 200 years after Christ, that the Bible is being shredded up into pieces. Oh, this is good, oh, this is not. Oh, well, why is that in there, and why is that in there? Is the Song of Solomon the Word of God? I hope nobody says, oh yeah! I said, okay, what are we supposed to learn from the Song of Solomon? Because that book is one of the creepiest volumes of witchery I think I've ever heard of. Guy couldn't get his mind out of the toilet for 5 minutes. So I'm talking about somebody's breath. I think we all know what kind of guy Solomon was. He was natural. You know, I'm not going to sit here and try to justify it. I don't have to. All I'm trying to do here is to say, where's that other letter that was written to the Thessalonians from Paul that's referenced right there in, I think, 2 Thessalonians, or I forget. If it was one of the Corinthians or the Thessalonians, I don't really remember. But it's in there. I can show it to you if you really want to get weird. Show you the reference to it. And you go, oh, so what's the matter? They got lost. And you go, but God wouldn't allow that to happen, right? Oh, I said, I'm sorry. I don't mean to sit here and pick apart your argument, but it's just so simple. If you want to use that definitive thing to say that the Bible is complete and with us and it's there, I'm sorry, it falls apart pretty readily. And you shouldn't proceed with that, so you can't just dismiss the Book of Mormon out of hand to say that God doesn't talk to man anymore. That's garbage. Or better to say, it's unsubstantiated. It's a tradition built on misinterpretation. At its best, a misinterpretation of Scripture, it's not just a statement that shouldn't have been in there in the first place, or that refers to a Bible that we don't even have anymore. A Bible that was obviously already exercised before we even got to it. So if you say, oh, there can't be any more, and you go, I'm sorry, you already know there's more. Paul himself said there's another letter that we don't have. Surely there was explanation. Surely there was other things that were in that letter. He made reference to it. He didn't say, oh, just forget about that letter I sent before because I'm going to mention it all again. He didn't seem to say that. He made reference to it. So, I found the morning's wanderings interesting. And I thought I might find what new tactics were being used by the enemies of the church to say what was to damn it finally, to justify why these people just walked away. And I find the same old hackneyed, rather cliched, not very impressive at all, basically striving to draw in, I'm sorry, the simple-minded, or those who really didn't believe it, particularly in the first place. Pretty low-hanging fruit, I have to say. Easy picking. You can just go around any church and find half-rotted fruit on the ground as an analogy to it. And that just seems to be what you have a lot of. It's a lot of low-hanging fruit, people who never really believed in the first place, therefore pretty easy for Christianity to pick it up, because most of Christianity's skeletons are so far in the past and so obscured by time and their belief systems have been so crafted over the years to justify nearly everything that's been done and said. But to find converts among the hardly believing, it's a simple matter. And to trumpet them and run them around, pay their lodging, pay their food, I'm sure there's some kind of remuneration for their time in coming and doing this. And it's a careful study on how you pick the Mormon church apart. It's not, I'm not even going to say it's hard. The people are imperfect, and they would say on a regular basis we're imperfect. We're going to say things. And of course, you always have to know that there's character assassination going on when there's small, isolated statements that say, oh, we caught them lying. Oh, we caught them saying this and saying that. We caught them there and caught them here. I watched this video that says, yeah, I caught Jeffrey R. Holland lying about Mormons. Of course, this is part of a much larger thing, where he almost immediately corrected himself once this guy said, oh, and then there's this and there's this. And you go, yes. In the old version of it, that's what was said and that's what was done. I find it a little sacrilegious that you even know about that, knowing that people who promised that they wouldn't reveal it then chose to reveal it. You're not dealing with the most upright people. Are you now? Of course, you can always bring that up. You go, you get your facts from some very interesting sources. You should be very careful. The enemy of my enemy doesn't mean they're your friend. How much money did you have to pay to come to this realization? Now, that's not a problem with Christians. Christians engage in a very heavy trade of having to get paid for their insights and their study guides and stuff like that. And I'm not going to sit here and degenerate that just to say that, you know, there's a pretty active trade in this stuff. And the Mormon Church doesn't have anything to do with that officially, of course. You know, people say, oh, here's a study guide about the Book of Mormon. You go, but it's not sanctioned by the church. If it was, it would be offered to the church usually for less than the cost of printing. So that's the kind of guys they are. I think it's a little more upright than saying, I'll tell you how to tear rip Mormons apart, but you're going to have to pay me $30 to do it every single time. And I expect you to call me on a regular basis so I can come and speak to your congregation about this stuff. I expect my remuneration. Anyway, so I'm not going to get on to them about that. Although I guess I just did, huh? I apologize. But yeah, when I came back from all this looking and all this searching, it comes back to A, spinning yarns, exaggerations, telling stories, comes back to taking small little snippets and trying to blow them all up to a huge, huge extent. These are not the activities of good people. If good people did this to you, I don't think you'd call them good. I don't think anybody would. These are tactics. Tactics used by not particularly good people. And I'll be the first one to say they're all Mormon missionaries. Don't. Can often fall into such traps as well. The version of the discussions that preceded the ones that I was that I was taught on how to do this were horrible. You swear that they were put together by a high pressure salesman. Every question was crafted so that it could only have one decent answer. And I consider that a form of manipulation. And I was very fortunate that I didn't have to be a missionary in those kinds of circumstances, because I probably would have just said, no, I'm not going to behave like that. I'm not going to follow some script. And that being a good missionary means that you've got the script memorized, and you can say it with good enough inflection that people don't know that you're working off of a script in your head. And things have been changing that way, too. We were getting less and less like that. And I'm grateful, because it bothered me. You can say, oh, well, not just an indication that you're evil. You go, no, it's not an indication that you're evil. It's an indication that you're not doing it in a very appropriate way. And I think Christians are evil. I'm saying Christians see an enemy, and that they're using whatever tools they can get to try to handle this enemy. I think it's a doctored up thing. I don't know why Mormons and Christians, why Christians feel they need to be like that. But apparently they do. That's sad, because it's not necessary. They shouldn't feel threatened at all. I've always been totally amazed by the fact that Mormons do more. It's like Christianity plus, and Christians are just, oh no, that can't be anything more than that. And you go, you know, that's probably a misinterpretation of something that you've read, having to chain together several scriptures from the Bible to try to get yourself there. I don't know how this got so ingrained into the tradition, but there it is. And that you'll do more by saying, you need to step back and say, what kind of a person am I becoming? What am I trying to do? Does my faith only work when another person's faith is ripped to shreds? Is that what mine is? I thought mine was an uplifting and a good thing. And if I say I've got all there is, I better be pretty dang sure it is all there is. And I'm not really sure that that's what the Bible ever told me. Anyway, but you know, there's differing points about all this stuff. There's no point in getting weird about it. So that's all I have for this morning.